This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kennison. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 19th of December. And how is this Thursday treating the both of you?
Quite good, because it's only just another day to the weekend.
It's the last weekend before Christmas, though.
I know, so, and panic stations, everybody, panic stations.
I know, I have such a long list of things I need to buy.
I'm not so much buy, mine is to do. That really freaks me out when I look at the list.
Let me look at my list. Oh, there's nothing on it.
What does that make you, Grinch of Christmas?
Yeah, we've established I'm the Grinch. I'm the BFM Christmas Grinch.
Don't kill the joy for us, okay?
Yeah, no, and just you can just go and sit in a separate room
I lie, I lie. I do have a list. I should get presents for my family, I guess. We'll see.
I can't believe that presents for his family are a maybe.
Terrible.
Yeah, no, but I think this is quite a nice Thursday morning to be in the studios chatting with the both of you. So what are we going to be talking about this in the next hour?
Well, remember taking your report card in school at year end? Wasn't it such a nerve-wracking time? I don't know about you, maybe because I wasn't such a stellar student. But guess what? It's not just school kids who now have to account for how they do.
I remember the consistent red mark. The only consistent red mark I had every year was Chinese. I think the lowest I ever got was a 9% for one of my Chinese exams.
How is that possible, Lin Mark, when you're a SWAT?
I just can't do it. I just can't do it.
Aren't you the one who got first class honours? Okay, never mind.
I didn't get a first class honours in Chinese, okay, clearly.
Anyway, okay, so I'll be taking a look, this is before 6:30 news, at the biggest headlines of the decade. And just to give you a little tease, the first headline from the Wall Street Journal had in early 2010, one of the biggest ones was Apple takes big gamble on the iPad. I wonder how that turned out.
So lots of fascinating things are lined up for you this morning. You can weigh in if you want to. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be discussing office secret Santas. Do you love them? Do you hate them? Let us know. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was One Headlight by The Wallflowers, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, The Guardian has a story very in keeping with the Christmas season, or more specifically, Christmas Grinches, like Roshan, because it's talking about why the office secret Santa is, and I quote, objectively the worst thing about the festive season. And of course, I read this and I went, no, it's not, because I've had great experiences of office secret Santas. And I was just curious as to, you know, what about the two of you? How do you feel about secret Santas?
It's not my favorite, but it's not the worst. The worst is probably the 101 questions from your nosy relatives about why, what's going on in your life, what's happening. Yeah, I think that's the worst when you sit down for dinner. Other than that, I'm okay with Secret Santa. It can be fun. I mean, the process itself is quite fun. I mean, we practice it here. And the way that everybody's like, kind of like, hey, what did you get? Who's the person you're giving it to? So how, do you know what she or he likes? What if I get the wrong present? I love that. It's so entertaining watching everyone kind of have a mini meltdown thinking of what they should do.
You are enjoying people's misery. Is that,
no,
is that
it's
what's
not.
Happening?
It's just like, it's
I'm everyone, the Grinch, apparently.
No, it's like everyone's like, hey, how? Do you know what the person likes? Because, you know, people who I don't talk to normally will come to me and say, hey, you work with so-and-so, right? I say, yes. You know, I'm in Secret Santa, you know. I say, okay. So what should I get him? I know nothing about him. So tell me, what's he like? And in that process, you do know something about that person.
Okay, wait, hang on. Can I just cut in here to say that if someone is asking Xiaoning about her, Secret Santa advice for his secret, for his, you work with him, what do I get him? There are only two men on our team.
Well, yes. You just have
so,
to guess.
I guess it's a 50% shot that I'm blaming you for my Christmas, my Secret Santa gift. Is that what we're implying here?
Maybe or maybe not.
Anyway, I think Secret Santa can be very fun. I think if everyone participates in it, I think you should be able to opt out, right? Because then you get the Grinches out of the way.
No, but then you'll be really the office Grinch, right?
No, but I mean,
then you shouldn't get a gift in turn.
Yeah, of course.
It goes both ways,
of course. Okay. If you opt out, you're not in the list, which means you don't get a gift and you don't give one. And that way, at least the people who feel the pressured or whatever don't have to participate in that. And then you only get the people who are enthusiastic about it. Because end of the day, the thought does matter when it comes to gift giving. And you don't want someone giving you a gift out of obligation. I think that takes the fun of it completely. And that's one of the things I really don't like about festive seasons, because when it becomes an obligation, it just, I think it becomes bad for everybody.
Yeah, but the thing is, reading this article, I actually realized, maybe obligation gifts aren't necessarily the worst thing, because this article talks to people who've had really passive-aggressive Secret Santa gifts, and I was quite shocked reading it. You know, it's things like a boss getting a laminated map to work for one of their employees to make sure that they aren't late.
No.
Yeah, and yeah. And that's...
That's mean, right?
It borders on mean. Yeah. So when everybody approaches the Secret Santa with just enthusiasm and with the spirit of, I want to get him or her something that they'll actually like, you know, I think that kind of just ramps up the excitement going into the season. But if you do have people who play this passive-aggressive game through Secret Santa gifts, then that's not so great. That's just generally a bit of a downer. That's a proper Christmas Grinch.
There was one right in The Guardian that was really, that was really bad, is when one of the recovering alcoholics was given a bottle of wine. Now, that's just really wrong. That's when you have no thought whatsoever for the person that you're giving to. You didn't even do a little bit of a channel check, or you just didn't care. So yes, it can go very badly. But I think for most people, they kind of just take it in their stride and they have a bit of fun. Especially so far, I've noticed in this office, everyone giggles about it. And they're like, okay, you know, let's wrap it up. Let's hide it under the tree. It's part of that whole, you know, festive season kind of feel to it.
Yeah, but I mean, here, don't put it under the tree unless you've got it cleared, okay? You've got to make sure it goes through the gatekeeper. Right? I'm not sure going to come after you. But that said, what are the best and worst presents you guys have received? Secret Santa or otherwise? You don't have to tell me explicitly, because, you know, you don't want to out the person who gave it to you, but...
I've had soft toys, which I don't like. It's totally on me. Please don't give me soft toys. No. I know I'm small and maybe look a little bit like an elf or a bear, depending what animal you want to choose. But I do not like soft toys. Just because I'm small and a bit chubby doesn't mean that I like other small, chubby things.
Okay, well,
take that into consideration, guys.
Duly noted, Xiaoning. No stuffed toys for you. So the best present I got was a book of poetry by one of my favorite poets while I was still an intern. So that was even more startling, because I'm like, oh, you know, this person actually took the time to get to know an intern. That's nice. A lot of thought went into that. So that was one of the best ones I received. Also from an office Secret Santa. One of the worst would probably be a stuffed calendar.
A what?
A stuffed calendar.
What was it stuffed with?
It was a stuffed toy calendar.
See, we have something in common.
Yeah, that they had these little these little cube blocks that you come up and flip around so you can change the numbers. It was just really not me, guys.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was very strange.
Just generally weird socks. I mean, fun.
Is there such thing as weird socks? All socks are good socks.
I don't know. I don't know. It was weird. Best gift. I actually can't remember. I'm sorry. It's the Arsenal jacket that I wear every day.
Oh.
I got that for Christmas.
Whoever did that, please take it away from him. Now, please.
I've got it like just 7 years ago.
Alleviate the rest of our suffering. Okay, well.
Wow, okay.
Well, do let us know what you think. What do you think about Office Secret Santas? Do you love them or hate them? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we're going to be tackling some of the biggest news stories of the decade, according to the Wall Street Journal, after these few messages. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was I Found You by Alabama Shakes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, since it is the end of 2019 and we're heading into 2020 next year in, well, just a few weeks, really, there are a lot of, you know, publications and media houses coming up with the decade in review. And the Wall Street Journal actually is quite interesting. So I came across this and out of curiosity, clicked through to their biggest headlines of the last 10 years. And what struck me was the very first headline that they have, which is from January 27th, 2010, Apple takes big gamble on the iPad. And it just shows you really how far we've come, actually, in the last 9 years or so. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the iPad feels like a regular part of life at this point, just taken for granted. Everyone's looking for Apple's next big thing. And but think that was 9 years ago. And what was it, a year later that Steve Jobs died? I think that was in 2011, just a week before they launched mm-hmm. the iPhone 4S. But, you know, right at the bottom, right, one, they ended this list off with another tech company that the Google co-founders step aside. So you could say that the decade began with one tech company venturing into a new space and it's going to end with the end of an era, really, for Google with Larry Page and Sergey Brin setting aside and putting Sundar Pichai to run the entire show.
Yeah, you're obviously tech junkies because you all noticed the no. headlines. My observation about this headline is that history kind of repeats itself, sadly. I mean, you have all these national catastrophes like floods, global warming, and it happens year after year. And we you know, and things seem to get worse. So climate change is real and doesn't seem to be abating, which is, I think, the scary part. If anything, the intensity of the floods, the intensity of fires just get more and more with each year. I mean, that's the part that I'm a little bit kind of sad about, actually.
Yeah, I think there was a picture of the California wildfires in this that was just last year. And it's really striking because I honestly didn't know what I was looking at when I first looked at this picture and it took me about 5 seconds to realize that it was rows upon rows of just flattened houses, that there was completely nothing left. And I can't imagine being one of the people living on this street. So, and this is something that is repeated over and over as you look through the big headlines, because you also do have protests and wars, and these things just never go away. So you kind of wonder, you kind of, on the one hand, you know, it's interesting to see that that some of these things actually did happen within the decade, because, you know, we are all a victim of recency bias. We all remember the most recent things first. But at the same time, it's history does repeat itself. I do agree.
It's kind of sad, right? Because we don't seem to be taking cognizant of the fact that maybe we could do some of the things, or we could, I don't know, is it too late? Julian's not in the room, you know, it's all doom and gloom. But, you know, whether we as, you know, whether we're doing enough for planet Earth. When you look at these pictures, it doesn't look like that's the case.
I mean, you have to channel some Jane Goodall, I guess, and just believe that there's hope, right? I think, Glenn, you had this conversation with her a few weeks back. End of the day, we have to have some hope that we can do something about it, because pessimism is not going to do anything for anyone at this point.
Yeah, I think what she said was, if you don't believe that there is that there is any hope, what are you going to do? Live fast, die young, you know, as if there's no tomorrow, right? But you have to just keep thinking that there is a tomorrow, particularly, you know, because otherwise there really is going to be no hope left.
I mean, just think about it for a second. 100 years ago, we were going through world wars, right? That was, not even 100 years ago. That was in the 40s. That was 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. Two world wars. I'm sure people thought the world was going to end at that point. All right. And overall, humanity has come a far way.
Yeah. Right? Mortality rates are much higher.
We don't have, mortality rates. People are living longer. I mean, that has its own problems for retirement, but we've come a long way. The industrial age has changed things and make things faster. And we just have to hope that we will be able to deal with this. But speaking of just the other things, the other big things over the decade has been, like, I noticed December 16th, 2015, Fed raises rates after 7 years near zero. It raised it from zero to 0.25 to 0.5. And then we saw a few years of rates being raised. And now it's everything's turned, the U-turn there.
Well, the Feds are still holding, if I'm not wrong, at the top of my head, 1.75 to 2. So it's not like they've raised it a lot, you know. Sadly, despite this very much loose, the economist in me. Sadly, despite the much looser monetary policy, it's not like the economy is doing so well around the world. Maybe US is a little bit better, but, you know, Europe is definitely soft. The rest of Asia is soft. So what, you know, how much more lower can rates go?
Britain, for one, is also still going through quite a lot of uncertainty, because now there's more concern that there's still going to be a no-deal Brexit coming through. And in 2016, in the Wall Street Journal, they had June 23rd, Britain votes to leave the EU. Three and a half years later, it's still ongoing.
I don't know, when we come to 2030 and they have the decade in review, that will be something that they'll be still talking about. It will still be ongoing. It's like a never-ending saga.
The first
saga,
headline
right?
will be, mandate for Brexit, January 2020.
There you go.
But I don't know, you know, it's like some of the stories just are like kind of like a lot of corporate mergers, which do make some sense and some don't make sense. Some companies which have closed down, like I forgot some of these names already. It's like, you're true. There is this bias to only remember the most recent.
Mm-hmm. So it's always interesting to look back, particularly on the early 2010s. So 2010s, 2011, 2012, to see, oh yeah, these things really did happen. And just look at kind of the repercussions that they've had over the years and whether or not we're still feeling some of the effects of them now. I think that's very interesting. Of course, my absolute favourite headline in this article is from July 11th, 2016, which is that the hunt for Pokemon has led to painful discoveries, because that was the start of Pokemon Go.
Oh my goodness.
I take it you weren't a Pokemon hunter, no. Shanning. Okay, well, that's to each their own. But do let us know what you think. What were your main headlines or biggest news stories from the decade that have stuck in your mind? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on the 6:30 news now, and here to take you there is Christmas Lights by Coldplay, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Sunday Girl by Blondie, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanisan. Now, the Malay Mail has an interesting article this morning, taking a look at one of our members of parliament who has presented his report card on his first year's achievement as MP, and this is Lembah Pantai MP Fahmi Fazil, who basically spoke to the media about some 10 achievements he made in the year after winning the seat in GE14 in May of 2018. So these include things like implementing a food bank project, reinstating the name of Kampung Kerinci, and expanding the Go KL free bus service, people's tuition programs. And overall, I looked at this article and I thought, this is an interesting way to go about it. So I would actually be interested to see what other MPs would have to put on their report cards now a year and a bit after winning their seats.
Yeah, I hope there's pressure on all of them to do so. I mean, it's good if the MPs all become accountable to their constituents, right? So they can show like, okay, I did A, B, C, D, you know. And also, if there's any way, I wonder whether there's any way to track, and the report card shows this, because I don't have the report card, I only have this Malay Mail article, whether it shows this versus what campaign promises were made, right? Because that's really whether you know your MP has delivered the goods he said he would. Because it's easy to say, I did A, B, C, D, but if A, B, C, D wasn't what's promised, then okay, thanks, but what about the stuff you did promise then? You know, that is the big question.
So I think the report card is something he's tweeted out, and it's basically three graphics depicting what he's done in his time as MP. Now, as much as I appreciate his efforts basically communicating what he's done, I would have preferred a independent party do this, right? Because if I can make my own report card, that would be great. I could just give my report card to my teachers and be like, hey, I got A in everything. Right, these are the things I did. But verification is important. And I laud his efforts, right? But can you imagine if Dato Sri Najib Razak did a report card for his own? Would we be treating it the same way?
He wouldn't remember anything.
I mean, he probably didn't do it or anything like that. But, you know, we have to look at it from the other side as well. If any other MP had done this, we would be questioning it. We would be, oh, this is self-promotion. And it is self-promotion. But communication is important. And that's why I personally feel the government has not done well. And you know, I look at this list and I'm like, wow, this guy has done quite a bit for his community mm-hmm. in the last year.
So yeah, so this is an example to for me of how communication just really communication wins you brownie points, right? And it's unsurprising that Fahmi Fazil is good at it, considering he is the PKR's communications director. Would that some of our other MPs and ministers had the same kind of communication strategy. But I do agree, you know, at the end of the day, I would be interested to see maybe an independent party come into this and verify us, maybe release report cards like this in partnership with the MPs, right? Because it's hard for an independent and or even a federal body sometimes to know what's happening on the ground in individual constituencies. So I can imagine it would be labor intensive, but at the end of the day, this kind of thing is exactly why you elect people into power. You want them to change things for their community. And sometimes, you know, we're busy people, we work, we don't necessarily follow exactly what they're doing on the ground. So it's good to know that these things are actually happening, even if they're not entirely on our radar.
And it's just very smart of him, because the way he's done it, he's built, he's made three infographics, easily communicate what he's done. And it is a very good, I mean, he is the head of communications at PGR.
He used to be an actor once upon a time.
Really?
Yes, I've seen him on stage plays. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, so he, y'all are too young. So, yes, he has this history of knowing how to communicate. And I will openly say he's my MP and he's very visual, very visible in the neighborhood. So he's clever in that way. He holds quite often, he'll have, I don't know what you want to call it, like a MP day. So it's available on his Facebook page. He puts out a message that he's available to meet whether you're happy or unhappy of this neighborhood, and go to this mall on this day, and he has a counter. And really, he is there, because I've walked to the counter to complain about stuff. And I like that engagement, because part of being an MP is being available to all your constituents. You know, there are cases where MPs just, you know, turn up 1 month before elections, do some campaigning, and you never see them again.
Yeah, and I think this brings up a much bigger issue about representation in politics, right? So MPs are one way, and this is, I mean, lately we'll be seeing more calls for the third vote to come back, which is basically voting for our mayors and our representatives in our local councils, because that is the closest thing to our homes, the way our cities are managed. And we have no say over that at this current juncture.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it would be better if we had mayor elections. But, Fahmi Fazli is not the only MP that knows how to use social media to his advantage, guys.
Because it is social media, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, because you can, the best way to follow them and kind of check what they're up to is social media, because every time they open a community centre, they go to a school, they do a local project, they do put it on up on Facebook. And he's not the only one, because a lot of KL MPs do that.
Well, tell us what you think. Should other lawmakers also present their 2019 report cards, perhaps? Is that something you'd be interested in seeing? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we are coming up on a few messages, and then we'll be taking a look at what you've been saying on social media. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Fashion by David Bowie, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shouning and Roshan. Now, thanks very much for your social media responses this morning. We have so far a grand total of one WhatsApp from Ro, who weighs in on the Secret Santa conversation. So he says, Secret Santa, revealing how little you know about your colleagues for 20 ringgit. Yeah, I think it is. I think that is one of the pitfalls, right, of Secret Santas, especially because, you know, if you're one of those people with really, really bad luck, you are just going to draw people that you don't know year after year.
But then go and do some digging, lah. Be a little bit of a Sherlock Holmes, right? Go around the office and like kepo, hey, you know that person, you work with him, right? Or her, I'll put her in this time, okay? What do you think? What does she like, huh? Should I get her some socks? You know, stuff like that, lah. Do some work. Do some groundwork. It wouldn't even take you 10 minutes.
Yeah, but I think, but it's always kind of a little bit more fun if it's a friend of yours, right, or someone you at least know, rather than someone you have never spoken to in a year.
But gives you an opportunity to know someone better. Otherwise, you might never speak to that person at all, or find out anything about that person, because we are always sometimes so cliquish. That's the problem. So Secret Santas allow you to be that little bit less cliquish.
Ramli Sirup also weighed in on Twitter to say an MP's report card should list what they did/didn't do as well as what they will do.
Yeah,
I think that's true. That's a good point. Just kind of clear up everything and consolidate all of the information into one place. Why not?
Yeah, anyway, taking a look at the papers, I've got The Edge in front of me, the Financial Daily, and the front page, quite a significant front page. Najib received kickbacks from 1MDB bond deals. This is according to the US Securities Exchange Commission. This is a story on page 7, which basically talks about the case involving Tim Leisner, who has allowed for discovery into the fact that there were kickbacks two government officials, including according to this, including Dato Sri Najib Razak, through Tim Leiser. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in our own courts over here.
Yeah. Ongoing saga, right?
Definitely. The gift that keeps on giving this Christmas season.
So the New Straits Times has gone with a front page on the KL summit. So it says Muslim allies set the tone. So this is a story that's continued on pages 2 and 4. And I think this is going to be one of the things to watch, because there are a couple of issues that I would like to see addressed out of this KL summit. Maybe have some decisions made on how countries, you know, how Muslim countries are going to address these. It's things like the Uyghur issue from China. It's things like, obviously, the Rohingya issue. And it's also India's citizenship bill, which we're going to be talking about later during the 7 o'clock hour, because there is concern that that could wind up being discriminatory against non-Hindus in India.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out more as the summit continues, right? Mm-hmm. On the Star, the front page has a very inspiring story about this lady she's visually impaired, and she's been saving for 19 years, squirreling 500 ringgit every month to buy her apartment in cash, finally, for 72,500 ringgit. And, you know, this is quite inspiring, because you want a home, you have to save for it, but I don't know whether we as government can do more rather than have this lady have to wait 19 years. But kudos to her. Now, the other headline which we will be talking about is blow up over ASB payout, because Amanah Saham Bumiputra's income distribution is the lowest since its launch in 1990.
And that's also something that we're going to be talking about later on this morning, just before the 7:30 news.
I've got something else that looks quite interesting, actually. The minimum wage, a new 1,200 ringgit minimum wage applicable in 57 towns and cities. Now, obviously, I'm not going to read out all 57 towns over here, but it includes Shah Alam, Ipoh and Petaling Jaya, as well as Kuala Lumpur. It will be interesting to see how the employers take to this, and whether we'll hear any news coming out of their own associations in the next few days or maybe early next year.
Indeed. And I also happen to have Sina Harian in front of me, and they've gone with a front page about DBKL actually asking for a ad to be taken down, a billboard it was an ad for Sugarbook, which is interesting. That was an interesting choice of advertising for them, I think.
You know what's funny? All this attention has probably given them more attention than that actual ad would have given them.
Absolutely, I think so. Because, you know, all publicity is good publicity, right? Well, right now, though, we are heading into the 7 o'clock news. And after that, we will be bringing you the business end of the morning run. So lots more fascinating discussions. But first, here is Diana Ross with You Can't Hurry Love, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.